Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Saturday, August 8th, 2009, and this is show number 218. I'm recording a day early because we're off on vacation for a week. Now, don't worry about somebody breaking in my house because I've told everybody in social media that I'm on vacation because my neighbor across the street has nicknamed herself Mrs. Kravitz. Now, if you're too young to have ever watched Bewitched, go look it up and you'll see why that's important to the plot. You see, she's really nosy. She's always keeping an eye on everything that's going on in the neighborhood. She knows who's doing what, and she's looking out her window. She's home all day. It's awesome. She and her daughter are going to be going in and out of our house. Who knows? They'll probably come over and watch some DVDs, hang out with our cat, Buzzy. Probably have a barbecue knowing her. Anyway, I don't think Buzzy's going to be too lonely without us. I think she's going to get lots of attention. So don't worry a bit about my house, and don't worry about the show. You see, I'm recording a day early this week, and I'll be a day late next week, so I'm going to average on-time delivery that you've come to know and love from the NoSilicast, right? Now, Robert and James, remember, the show will be there for your Tuesday commute on the 18th, not on Monday. Now, I don't want anybody worrying. And, you know, if you walk your dogs, you know, you got to tell them it's not going to be NoSilicast Monday, it's NoSilicast Tuesday, so make sure you're, I hope you guys are going to be okay. I got to tell you, I'm recording the show all alone right now. I decided it was too much stress to pack and get ready and do the show and try to figure out when to do a live show. So I'm just all alone. It's kind of lonely. So I don't know if I'll be able to pull off a live show next week because I'm going to be recording on a Monday. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Stay tuned with Twitter and just keep track of what's going on there. I'll let you guys know if I decide to do it. But assume I'm not because I probably won't. Well, you know what? The 24-inch cinema display has a microphone in it that is too good. I say that because my lovely co-hosts over on the Mac Roundtable never even noticed that I had my microphone set to the display audio instead of my Heil PR20 microphone. Well, Steve noticed right away when he heard the recording, and I could certainly tell, and a few of you guys wrote into me as well to point out that I was on the wrong microphone. But I guess the good news is that it's a pretty good mic, but I do need to start paying attention to myself. See, when I record with Bart, I use Wiretap Studio to pull in the two channels separately. I have Bart from Skype and me directly from the microphone, and it mixes brings the two together as two separate channels in Wiretap Studio. So I never hear what I sound like to Bart. I'm wondering how long he's been listening to me on the wrong microphone. Oh well, the real culprit here is that Skype doesn't obey the system preferences. I wonder if there's any way they can justify that as a feature they implemented on purpose. If you can think of a reason why they might have done that, I'd sure like to know. Well, you know how much I love shareware and freeware developers, right? This week was a perfect example. On the last show, I explained that Guru from Global Delight had created a coupon code so we could all buy Voila for 25% off if you typed in the coupon code NoSilicast, all capital letters. On Thursday, I got this desperate tweet from Tom Perino, also known as Macintom on Twitter, and he said that the coupon code wasn't working. Well, I shot off an emergency email to Guru, who immediately tested the coupon, verified the problem, fixed the problem, and tweeted Macintom back that it was functioning. Whew. Tom happily was able to buy the software of Voila at 25% off. Well, that kind of rapid response is what I love about shareware and freeware developers. Can you imagine how long it would take for a big commercial company to respond to that? The entire elapsed time between the crisis beginning and resolution using today's technologies was an entire 4 minutes. The only downside that I could see to this entire story is that Tom is now blaming me for costing him more and more money because he keeps buying the things I've talked about. Crybaby. Anyway, don't forget to send me an email with the word Voila in the title, and you have to spell it right, or more my... automatic group or whatever they call it, what do you call it, smart folder in mail will not find it. So make sure you get those in. I think I'm going to do the drawing the week after next. So I forget the date, but I told you last week, so go back and pay attention. It's in the show notes somewhere. But make sure you get that in, then you get a chance to win your own copy of Voila. Listener Linda wrote in a question that perhaps many of you might also have. I'm not sure it counts as a dumb question, but I guess the dumb questions are defined as those ones that you feel like you shouldn't ask, but maybe somebody else has a question, so maybe it is. I should preface this question with the fact that Linda is one of my longest, not oldest, friends. She and I went to high school together, and we've been in contact ever since. She's been listening to the show on and off for a while now, just to hear my voice. That's sweet. She's not a geek at all. In fact, she's a renowned chef instead. Oh, I should mention that she's being sucked into our madness, though. She just bought her first Macintosh from Pat Dengler. Anyway, on to her question. Al, do you write a script for your podcast? It often sounds like you're reading a script, so that's why I'm asking. Have you ever considered just jotting program notes to yourself and speaking spontaneously? I think experimenting with a looser format would give your personality freedom to bloom and delight your listeners. You don't need such a strict structure now that you have such deep expertise with your subject matter, have such a loyal following, and great collaborators. Maybe you'd be willing to experiment with a segment or two of your show and see what it feels like to fly without a net. I bet you and your listeners would enjoy your spontaneity. I feel a little scary at first, but you're most brilliant and attractive when you ad-lib. Well, Linda sure knows how to flatter me, that's for sure. Now, I have given this a lot of thought over the years, and I actually have experimented with ad-libbing. I've flown without a net. If you listen to the earliest shows, I had only a few cryptic notes like you describe. And guess what? They're dreadful. They sound awful. Now that I'm more practiced, there's a couple of reasons why I still script the show. First, all week long, I'm studying software and determining how it works. I'm looking at what problem it solves and how I assess the software and trying to describe in detail all the different steps and the things you can do with it. There is no way a week later I could remember what I felt at the time of using the software. I gotta confess to you, half the time I can't even remember what I reviewed, much less how well it worked. I mean, when I pop up in the show notes on Sunday nights, I'm going, oh, really? Is that what I worked on earlier in the week? My mind is just not there, I'm telling you. Now, the good news is I write just like I speak, so it's fairly natural and about as natural as a script can actually be. I don't know how people read a script someone else writes. Secondly, I have a commitment to those with disabilities, and while the audio recording is awesome for the blind, if it weren't for my lengthy script, which is published as show notes on the blog, the deaf would be left out of the party. I mean, it's great for the blind, but what about the deaf? You can't just say they don't count, right? There's also a significant number of people who tell me they prefer to read instead of listen to the show. And since my end goal is to have them gain benefit of the content and not to control how they receive the content, I happily publish it for them. There are even people who tell me that they read while they listen, so they actually use both. That way they can click the links and look at the images while I'm describing things. You know, I have tried winging it fairly recently, and I've tried using just bulleted show notes to help trigger memories of what I wanted to say, but it turns out it's actually harder for me to write bulleted notes than to write what I actually want to say. I would find myself just, you know, working, I'd write a sentence and I'd find myself trying to cut the words down in the bullet to make a shorter sentence. What's the value of doing that work? Now I just made it so nobody can read it and I had to do more work to create it. It's actually harder to be brief than it is to be complete. Just try writing in Twitter once in a while. The other big problem is when I'm not scripted, I stutter and stammer and I get stuck constantly, so it's really not good. Now, I'm sure you figured out that chit-chat across the pond is not scripted. It's really easy to have a few bullet points with two people and then ramble around the topic if you're, you know, good friends like Bart and I are. But alone, it's awful. Now, I have found that if I've got an audience, I can do a stand-up routine to a big audience. I don't need a script at all if I know my material. But to a cold metal microphone, it's impossible. I hope that answers your question, Linda, and anybody else who might have had the same question. I have sad news to report. The MiFi hack I was so excited about last week doesn't seem to be working. I don't know if I just wasn't accurate in my cutting of the paper template, or perhaps it's too easy to slide it around so it doesn't stay aligned to cover only the middle two data pins. But I can tell you that in several experiments, while plugged in and operating successfully as a Wi-Fi hotspot, the battery was not being charged at all. I'm bummed. Well, now I'm on the hunt, and if you can help me find this, please let me know, for a charge-only micro USB cable. I have found charge-only mini USB cables, but none for micro USB yet. So keep your eyes peeled. It'd be great if somebody could find me one. And I'm not looking for like a $60 one, you know, something reasonably priced.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
How do I?
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
You know, sometimes I hope we have dumb questions just so I can play that music. Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User created that for me, and I just love it. I listen to it every time. It makes me really, really happy. Anyway, let's get into Dumb Question Corner. Neil wrote in with a question that I didn't know the answer to, and I had to dig around for a while, but let's hear his question first. Allison, O wise one, I remember a moment or two back, you tweeted about deleting photos from the iPhone. I have an iPod Touch. One of the kids' applications has saved photo images to the touch. Normally, I can delete them with iPhoto, import, then delete the originals. But now, I have a corrupt image that iPhoto can't import. So every time I sync, iPhoto opens and I get an error. Any ideas? I got to tell you, Neil, I mean, I am the wise one and all, but this one took some digging. I tried to see if I could maybe mount the iPhone as a drive using Terminal, but I couldn't figure that out. And I remember I did talk about some way to do this, but I, top of my head, I can't actually remember how I was going to do it. But I did find an answer to this. I figured out that you can actually use Image Capture to manage photos on your iPhone. You plug in your iPhone or iPod Touch, I should say, and launch Image Capture. When you first open it, there's not much goodness showing, but click the Download Some button and you'll get some useful features. At first, you just see Download To and Download All and an Options button, but Download Some is where the goodness happens. Once you click that, you can click on the corrupted photo because it shows you all of the photos one by one, photos and videos, by the way, which, you know, gets a little dicier in some applications. So you can click on that one corrupted photo and then click the Delete button. I did notice that when this window first opens, it's too narrow for all of the menu options to show, so the delete button is actually not visible when you first open it. Widen the window if that happens to you, and you will find all of your photos and be able to delete them at will. Well, I am sure glad Neil asked this question, because it's exactly what I was looking for to do some other things. This lets you manage your videos, too. Like I said, you can download them and then delete them right for here. I've been trying to figure out how to get them out of there. I've been going into iPhoto all the time, and I don't actually use iPhoto. Now I have a better way to solve my video problem. The bad news is that this unfortunately did not help Neil. He couldn't actually click on the corrupt image. It was grayed out or something like that, and so it couldn't even be selected in Image Capture to be deleted. He ended up having to do a full restore to get control of it again. But I'm really glad that he told me, or I had to find this, because I started poking around in Image Capture, and it's got some other cool things it can do. I don't think I've opened Image Capture in years, so maybe you haven't either, and it's got some great capabilities now. First of all, you can rotate your pictures as you download them so they're oriented properly. And then there's a pull-down with a whole slew of options, like Build Slideshow. I selected the folder into which I wanted it to put the files, and then I clicked Build Slideshow. In just a few seconds, the files were downloaded, and OS X automatically started a slideshow of them, complete with the Ken Burns effect. Now I know I could have selected them all from the folder after downloaded, selected File, Slideshow, and gotten the same thing, but it was still kind of cool if you're in a hurry and you just wanted to show people your photos. Another fun option is Build Webpage. Just as quickly as it made the slideshow, it actually downloaded the files, created the HTML to make a grid of thumbnail photos on a web page, and then you could click on them to see the photo blown up in your web browser. To do all this, it actually has to resize your pictures, making one at 200 pixels across for the thumbnail and another one at 800 across for the big version. It's nothing fancy, but man, it was really, really quick if you wanted to just bang out a web page. Image Capture also lets you crop your photos to four different standard sizes. Or you can choose to have it resize your photos to fit in a standard size. I actually think that's much more useful because who knows what it would crop you to if you crop it to if you just let it go at it with reckless abandon on its own to your photos. So check out Image Capture again. If you haven't ever played with it, it's built right into OS X, so it's free and you don't even have to go get it. Look in your applications folder. Everyone I talk to seems to have a need for screen steps. I'm serious. There's the daughter whose dad needs extra help on the computer. There's the software developer needing to create useful documentation. There's the help desk that would rather create a quick, how do I, and just send the link every time they get the same question. There's the friend who just likes helping people. There's Mac people. There's Windows people. Just about everyone can creatively and enjoyably create documentation that helps somebody else out or helps them not to have to answer the same question over and over and over again. If you've ever worked a help desk, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't bought Screen Steps yet or haven't tried the free 30-day demo, you don't know what you're missing. For $40, you can have the version that's good for bloggers, or $80 for the pro version that's, yeah, it's better for collaborating with other people and creating big manuals, you know, if you're a team working on some software, for example. Both versions let you embed videos now, so you can even show the tricky bits with video. Head on over to screensteps.com, and when you're ready to buy, make sure you use the coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, to get 25% off those prices I quote. Think about it. $30 to make yourself happier and to spread your knowledge. Do it! My friend Nolan asked me if there's an application that would let you have multiple pages of dashboard widgets. He must be going a little nuts with dashboard widgets because he just got a new Mac, his first Mac, actually. I think it's his first Mac, yeah. And so he's probably got a lot of dashboard widgets. I might need to tell him how slow his computer might be running now as a result. Anyway, I'm more of a menu bar hog than a dashboard person. In fact, I often forget that I've got things like world clocks at my fingertips so that I can see what time it is in Ireland instead of having to do the math all the time. And I've got a bunch of other cool widgets that I added ages ago. Nolan's request got me intrigued. I wondered if there is such an application. With just a little bit of digging, I found Multidash from jasonprojects.net. The description says Multidash is a widget for a Mac OS X 10.4 Tiger that manages your dashboard. You can arrange widgets to custom groups and easily switch between them. This sounded ideal till I read the next line that said, it's buggy and Leopard, so Jason doesn't recommend it. And he's not working on it. Darn, back to the drawing board. Next up, I thought I'd ask the Twitterverse. Mark Shepard suggested Amnesty Widgets from amnestywidgets.com. Amnesty Widgets has a bunch of different tools for messing with your widgets, but none of them appear to give Nolan exactly what he's looking for, a way to have a second dashboard he can flip to. I ran out of ideas and out of resources, did as much Googling and Twittering as I could to try to find it, and I didn't find a solution. If anyone out there has any ideas how to do this, let me know. Margaret wrote in to tell me about a very silly little application. And she's kind of silly herself, so it fits right in. But after reading her email, I just had to load this software. It was just too funny. The application she sent me is called Polaroid from polaroid.net. And she found it on a blog she says is wonderful called amsterdamize.com, like Amsterdam with I-Z-E at the end. She says that it's a beta application that solves no problem whatsoever, but it reminded her, for the nostalgia factor, of the application Tape Deck that a listener reviewed a while back for us. So what does Polaroid do already? It allows you to create Polaroid-type pictures with your digital photos. Yep, you can make them look like they were taken on a Polaroid. They have this cool image of a Polaroid camera. The application itself is this great image that kind of floats on your screen, and it's 3D looking. It's very, very cool. And I'm not even sure how they do that, how they make it float like that, because it doesn't have borders, really. It's kind of strange. Anyway, you drag a photo onto the camera, and then it makes the distinctive mechanical sound of the camera shoving the picture out. If you're as old as me, that brought back a memory right there. Anyway, you can let the photo develop on its own, or you can shake it to speed up the process, which is what we all used to do in the old Polaroid, shake it and see if it would speed up the development. Once the photo is developed, a chime will ring. The Polaroid photo set is saved in your pictures folder, and you can change the destination folder and preferences. You can even change your preferences to include fingerprints on your photos. Isn't that perfect? According to the Polaroid manual, the resulting images reproduce all imperfections of a real Polaroid photo, such as color shifting and vignetting. I just thought this was hilarious. They thought of everything. Now, Margaret included a picture of her bicycle that she converted to a Polaroid, and it's got a nice fingerprint on it, just like the real ones. This software is technically in beta, but it's listed as version 9.5, so maybe they're just joking about that. In any case, tell me what danger you'd be running into if a beta application that pretends to be a vintage camera making bad photos. What would the danger be again? Maybe they would come out good instead of bad? So this week, Honda Bob gave me a story to tell. Here's what he told me. I was at the car show yesterday at Bob's Big Boys restaurant in Burbank when this lovely little lady drove up in a cute little 1957 Isetta made by BMW. I was looking at the car when I noticed the left rear tire was starting to fall apart. Well, being the mechanic that I am, I offered to replace her tire for her. Needless to say, it drew a crowd taking pictures. Naturally, I also had to see the engine in this beast. He sent a bunch of pictures, and you have to see this cool little car. It's crazy small. The shots of the car compared to other cars, a great picture of the lovely little lady, a shot of the engine, and even two pictures of Honda Bob underneath it fixing the tire for her, and a crowd of well-wishers watching while he does his work. If you'd like to have the kind of mechanic who would just start working on a lovely little lady's 1957 vintage Isetta just because she needed the help, and he thought the car was really cool, then consider buying a Honda or an Acura and moving to the LA or Orange County areas. If you do, give him a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email at hjabob@aol.com. HJ Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's that time of the show again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond, but this is not with Bart Bouchatz. As you recall, the last time he was out of town, I went to one of my spare Belgians. I went to Nightwise, but Nightwise is relaxing on the south coast of France, of all places. So we've gone to our third spare Belgian here. We have on the show today Peter Boots, also from Belgium. How are you doing today, Peter?
Hi, Allison. I'm fine. I went to the south of France also in the last 3 weeks, so I know how it is there.
I bet it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Looks like a lot of fun down there. So the way you and I have been corresponding for, I went back and looked, it's been a good couple of years. We've just chatted about odd little problems you seem to come across. You do seem to come up with some interesting questions sometimes.
Yeah, but I try to do my best to find some special questions for you, eh?
Definitely special. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. How? What's your life like? What are you doing with the Mac? What's going on with you?
Well, I'm something like 43 years old or young, and have a beautiful wife and two children, age 9 and 12. And I'm working in the advertising business as a designer of promotional cardboard displays. You know, the ones you bump into in the supermarkets.
Now, you don't make the ones that make noise, do you?
Sometimes, yes.
Oh,
but
there's these ones
in Europe, it's not so bad as in the United States, I think.
The grocery store we go to, luckily I don't go to it often, it's mostly Steve, but they have this same kind of freaky like cartoon music that goes on, and it's on all of them in every aisle, and when you're standing at the checkout counter, it's really loud pointed at you, so it doesn't bother the checkers, but it's just the exact same sound, the same music over and over and over again. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone or something. It's horrible.
No, it's not so bad here, but maybe it will... Yeah, it will be like that in a few years. Huh?
Everything trying to catch our attention. So, do you use a Mac at work then?
Yes.
Lucky.
The design studio uses Macs, and all the rest are using PCs. Also, the server is a PC.
Oh, okay.
I can't do anything about that.
So you've been on the Mac a long time?
Yes, from the beginning of the Mac almost, I think around 1986, and the first Mac was 84, I think. Eh?
Yeah, yeah, so right towards the beginning.
Now, yeah, the first Mac I used was, you know, the small one, the 512K little...
That was my first Mac, too.
Box, gray.
Changed the world, didn't it?
Yeah, and later the ESE, that was the next one, a little bit more of a RAM, and I still have one like that.
Oh, do
but
you?
If I want to start it up, I have to put it on its side, and then I can set it up, and then it works. I don't know why, but something's loose inside. But,
well, I'd wonder how you figured that out. Did you pick it up and you were shaking it, and it suddenly started or something?
Yeah, I can't remember yet how I did that, but it's strange. It's only like that it works.
So what's your current Mac?
It's the 24-inch iMac 3.06 Intel Core Duo, and I've got 4 gigs of RAM.
Awesome. So that's the same machine I just bought Steve, and he's pretty happy with
he's,
that.
He's happy also. But my CD my CD player failed.
Oh, wow, already?
But it's within a year, so Apple will replace it.
Oh, but that means sending your baby away, doesn't it?
No, someone will get the new one, and he will change it for me, and then they send the other one back.
Oh, so, okay. Oh, well, that's
but
good.
They have to, yeah, they have to get the glass off in front, and it's with little magnets or something.
Oh, geez.
It's nothing you do yourself, I think.
I hope not. So one of the things, oh, you also mentioned you make websites.
Yeah, I started that a few years ago, 2 years ago, and I used RapidWeaver for that. And it's very nice to do. I made a couple of websites, about five, I think, and it's, well, it's fun to do. I made also my own website because I'm also a freelance designer for 3D presentations for architects and, you know, whomever wants something in 3D. So I made a website for that also.
Oh, make sure after we get off the show, you give me the URL for that. I'd like to share that with people.
Oh, yes, I can do that.
That'd be great. Yes. So we normally start with Security Light, but since neither you nor I are security experts and Bart's not here, you suggested an alternate topic here was to talk about backups. So what's your backup strategy? Well, how do you handle that?
Well, together with the new 24-inch, I bought the, what is it, a Time Machine? But I quickly changed that to 6 hours because it's too much every hour, I think.
So
safety,
you're doing that an external drive then?
What?
You're doing that Time Machine, you're sending it off to an external drive? Well, obviously you only have one drive inside your Mac, so you've got an external hard drive?
Yeah, yeah, the Time Machine is... it's the Time Capsule.
Ah, there we go.
Mistaken. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the way. And but normally it's 1 hour, and then it backs up. But I changed that to 6 hours. And then I have another disk, half a terabyte, I think, that I use SuperDuper to make a backup on too.
Now, why do you do both? I hear a lot of people say that. I only do SuperDuper, but I've never understood why people do both.
Well, the difference is on SuperDuper, you just make an exact copy of your machine. So it sees what changed and put that instead of the old one. And with Time Machine, he keeps the old one for as long as he can, as much space you have on the disk.
Oh, right, right.
So in Time Machine, you can just go back a week and find the file you've overwritten or deleted. But the good thing with SuperDuper is that you can start up from the disk.
Right,
so
right.
If now my internal disk fails and I have to do, I have to have a work that I have to do, then I can just start up from the other disk and finish my job.
Yeah, I definitely depend on that, on the SuperDuper full, being able to restart from it. That's definitely the way to go. I think I don't, there's a couple of reasons I don't use Time Machine. One is that I create these fairly large audio files. I think I calculated once it's something like 1.2 gigs worth of files every week. And so Time Machine, trying to keep track of those, the disk fills up in about, 4 days. So I really can't use SuperDuper or Time Machine for that reason. The other thing is I don't edit a lot of files where I would have like accidentally deleted it and I need to go back 3 days to get it or accidentally overwritten it. Yeah, I use Feeder to create the text for my show, but every single other thing I do is either audio-based or it's my email, which is also on Google servers, things like that. I don't create a lot of documents where I would have, a lot of Excel files or anything. Yeah, I have a few, but that isn't a big need for me. So going back a few days to what I've deleted just, doesn't happen.
Yeah, it was also just fun to see if it works. Huh?
Well, there is that, but it doesn't always work in my experience.
Show it off to people when they visit.
Yeah, well, I think it's good for less sophisticated users too, because they just don't have to think about it.
Yeah, you just plug it in and it starts. Huh? Yeah, but I used it once for a file I deleted, but only once.
Do you find it reliable? Or does it stop working for you sometimes?
I had problems with it, but not with the backup, but with the internet connection, because it's a router inside.
Oh.
And sometimes the green light went orange, and I had to pull out the power and put it back in.
Oh, okay.
To get a connection.
So that was the router half of it, not the backups.
Yeah.
But that's
the backup is okay.
So Time Machine runs reliably for you. You never have to kick it and make it start back up or anything.
No, it works perfect. But with me also now, it is full, and then he has to delete the oldest files before he can will put the new ones on. And
right.
I think. It takes a lot of time now, so maybe I have to empty it and start over. Yes. Yeah.
Well, my super duper drives backups take forever. I mean, by forever, I mean like an hour. Now Bart says it's because I have too many files. It's something like 2.5 million or files or something like that. I have a lot of files, and he says that's why. But I would have thought an incremental backup, a weekly incremental backup, would take 10 minutes or something. But it takes forever.
Yeah, I haven't timed it, but it's not so long as the Time Machine does.
Hmm.
So I'm happy with it. But
now, do you do an offsite backup?
Yeah, also I have one disk that I take to my work, and not every week, but maybe every few weeks, I take it home and make a copy and take it back to work.
Yeah, doesn't that seem a lot easier than all these things like Mozy and Carbonite and all these things?
Yeah, because I think
faster.
That also takes an enormous
time. Oh,
It's a time issue, I think.
Right. I mean, if my backups take an hour when it's hard connected, how long would my backups take if I had to go to Mozy? That'd be insanity.
Yeah. And you have to pay for it also.
Right. Yeah, I do the same thing. In my case, I use a laptop, so I keep the hard drive never moves, but once a week I take my laptop into work, plug it in, start the backup drive, and then I start working on the stupid, idiotic, annoying PC I have to use. And but in the meantime, my Mac is happily backing up, so I feel a little more comforted there that I've got that backup there.
Yeah. Me also.
So now, you told me you're a huge fan of expensive, big manufactured company software, right?
No. I use them at work and at home also, Adobe, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're so expensive. If you want to update them, it costs a lot of money.
Right.
So I'm looking for, smaller and newer programs. First of all, because they're less expensive, but also because they're newer and they are maybe better built with newer technology.
Because they're not carrying all the baggage from the old ones?
Yeah, like Photoshop, they can't change everything in the program, I think. They can do something, but it stays the old program.
Right, because they can't just break compatibility with their, huge user base.
Yeah. And the same for Illustrator and
all the big
ones,
right?
Like Dreamweaver.
So, what are the small tools that you're entranced with now? What do you like?
Well, I'm trying to use instead of Photoshop, I try to use Pixelmator, and it costs about 60 euros, that's $80 or something. So that's a huge difference with Photoshop. The interface is gorgeous. And, they're only at version, I don't know, maybe version 2 or something, or maybe 1. So they have a way to go, but they're doing it right, and they have all the things like layers and filters and whatever you can do with Photoshop, mostly you can do with Pixelmator. But, well, you have to get used to the new interface, of course, but it's a nice program. And for that money, it's worth to try.
Yeah, I haven't used it in a long time, but I really, really liked it. It was funny. The one thing that kept me from using it regularly is something I think I just have to get over, and it was that you couldn't do a crop to a 4:6 aspect ratio, for example. It was all freeform. There was no defined fields for it, and that just really bugged me. And now, the more I think about it, I print like a photograph a year now. So why do I care that it's 4:6? Why can't it be, you know, 12 inches across and 2 inches high?
Yeah, but maybe they fixed it now. I don't know.
They probably have, but still, maybe. But does it matter? You know, why is it that was such a big thing for me?
Yeah.
Now, you also mentioned Vector Designer. What is Vector Designer? What's it do? I've never heard of that.
It's a vector-based program. So you could use it to drop Illustrator, for instance. And I believe Don McAllister has made a show about Vector Designer.
Don's made a show about everything.
Yeah.
That's Don McAllister of Screencast Online, if anybody didn't know who we were talking about. Now, I'm not an Illustrator user, so I don't really understand. What would you make with Vector Designer?
Well, with a vector-based program, you can browse shapes in any form, and if you enlarge them or make them smaller, they stay the same quality. As in Photoshop, if you take a picture, you have to take it high enough to be able to work with it and not having to enlarge it and losing all your quality.
Right.
So, but it's not for pictures. You can put pictures into it, but it's for surfaces, or as we say, dégradés. I don't know if you know that word.
No. What's the word?
From black to white in a smooth way.
Okay.
But you can make any form and enlarge it, and it stays beautiful if you print it or make a photograph, print it on photo paper or something.
Oh, cool. So what would you... Is this to make graphics for a website, or what do you use it for?
For instance, for a website, you can also draw text in it, put it, change it to an outline, and then move all the little pointers and make another kind of font of it.
Oh, okay. Cool. That sounds really fun. I just went and looked at the website, and it just the websites of every piece of software you've suggested. I've been looking them up as we're going through them, and they're gorgeous. They're really really pretty programs.
Maybe it's because I'm a designer myself that I'm always happy to see nice crafted websites and programs. There are some people mostly on PC that they don't care about those things, and for me it's strange.
Now, that might make some of the open source tools less attractive to you, because a lot of times they look sort of Soviet war era, or a lot of times you'll get open source programs that look like a PC program. They look like a Windows, not even XP, not as pretty as that, you know, Windows 2000 kind of Windows.
Yeah, sometimes they're good programs, and it could be okay to work with, but if it's not nice to work with, I don't like it. I want to sit in front of my computer and be happy to work with it, and not be a kind of a slave of
ugliness.
Of the program. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that sounds so funny, but I know that's a lot of what I feel like when I'm using Windows, is that certain things, they just look so crude, you know. They don't have that happy feel, like you said.
Now, you mentioned it's also the difference between on the Mac, you have this automatic anti-alias, so that your text is always looking smooth, and on the PC, it's always with, you know, little blocks, and I don't like it.
So, let's see, you mentioned Google SketchUp. That's a program we've talked about a couple of times on the show, but refresh memories here.
Yeah, that's one that I have to study because I use it sometimes, but I'm not very crafted in it. But it is so fun to use because you see what you are building on the screen. You can just draw a square on the ground and literally pull it up and you have a block and you can put another block on it or a circle and make a tube, and so you can build very easily and very fast with this program.
I went through all the tutorials one Christmas. Now, this was a couple of years ago, so it's probably come a long ways now, but I was bored one Christmas, I think, in the car driving to Fresno or something, and I just started going through all of the tutorials. They've got some great tutorials that just help you walk through every one of the steps. It's really, really kind of fun.
Yeah, they're amazing. And also, you have two versions. You have the free version because it's taken over by Google, I think, a couple of years ago or 2 years ago.
Right.
So now it's from Google, and you have the free version, and then you have a paid SketchUp Pro version.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know the difference between the two, what you can do more with the Pro version. I think export and import is better.
Okay. I'll have
but
to...
Yeah,
I haven't got the paid-for version, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't actually have a need for it, but it's really interesting to see what you can do with these tools now. I was just looking at the SketchUp page. It's at sketchup.google.com, and it's got they've got a picture of the opera house in Australia and in Sydney. And I mean, it's just like, this thing is amazing, and it's been done in SketchUp.
Yeah, it's this program that is used to make all these buildings and put them in Google Earth on the right spot to make it more 3D.
Definitely cool. So let's see, and you talk, picturesque. That was the next one on your list. What does picturesque do?
Yeah, it's a small program where you can, if you open it, you get a blank space, which says drag your picture here or something like that. And if you just drag a picture in it, you can change, you can give it reflection, give it shadow, give it a corner, you can give it round corners, all these things that you can also do in Photoshop, but you can do much quicker in this picturesque. And also what I think is the best thing, I use it for my websites to quickly make a little picture having a reflection or skew it is also possible. But the best thing is that you can save your settings. So if later you need the same picture in the same direction with the same shadow, you just can click on the settings and you're ready to go.
Oh, wow. So you can reuse the settings that you did on another photo, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Because I had a problem that I made a nice picture with a rounded corner or an edge on it in another color, but yeah. You never, you can't remember how you did that. I never write everything down. So,
now you know you could make yourself a Screen Steps tutorial as you're doing these things. You know you could.
And I have to say, sorry, Alison, but I haven't yet bought it.
Just yet. As long as you say yet, that's okay, right?
But I probably will. I think I will.
It's just a matter of time. Yeah, eventually everybody wears down. And I have yet to have somebody write back to me and say, you know, Alison, that stuff's crap. I can't believe you talked me into that. I want my money back. Everybody's written back and gone, wow, that's really cool. I like it.
Yeah, the latest version, you can put video in it, I think. So.
Yeah. It's really, it's getting much, much cooler. So on things like on picturesque, is that non-destructive editing or is that destructive editing?
I don't know. So I haven't checked it out.
Like if you if you edit a photo and, you know, put a reflection on it, can you go back and take that reflection off and it goes back to the way it was? Or
Oh yes, you can. You have sliders on the bottom and you can put it off and on and more and less and mix them together or just
okay,
take
so that's
it away.
Excellent, because that is non-destructive editing then. That's something I'm starting to expect when something just, you know, does make it flatten the image and that filter gets permanently embedded into the, you know, into the to the pixels that now I'm like, oh, come on, you can do better than that.
Yeah. No, this way you can experiment and look for the best, best solution.
Yeah. So then, and we already talked about Rapid Weaver. Now, you've banned Microsoft Office from your computer. Is that right?
Yeah. My wife wasn't happy. she's a school teacher, and, she always got documents, point doc from Office, and, she opened it in Word and was happy with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but she was. But I forced her to use Pages, and it's a few months now, and
is she a convert?
She's happy now. She now understands the benefits of some things in Pages versus the Office packet.
Now, I bought the iLife suite, or the iWork site suite, I should say. I bought that and a couple of revs ago, one rev ago, something like that. And I couldn't get into it. I didn't, maybe it's because I don't create a lot of documents, but the numbers to me, I'm such an aficionado of Excel that I really, really like it. It makes me really happy. I don't see the compelling reason to go to numbers. And I don't do much Word documents, so I didn't see the value of Pages yet.
Yeah. Numbers is, I have to get used to it also because I use Excel for maybe 20 years now because it's, I think, the first program on the Macintosh before it went to the PC. I think it's written specially for Macintosh in those early years. So it's old, eh? What I wanted to say, numbers, what I like about it is that you can put different sheets on one sheet of paper.
Almost like layers?
Yeah. Hmm. So you can, in Excel, you have you have the little tabs down, so you can make a new page and click from one to another. But in numbers, you can just drag them on the same sheet and move them around. So you're not, like in Excel, forced to have just one big sheet with ABC and 1, 2, 3. And it's more about layout. Eh?
Okay.
So you can make much nicer pages that you can also export to Keynote or to Pages to do things with. And also when you put a pie chart on the page, you just can move it all around and make very nice things with it.
I think what I really should do is go back and watch Don's screencasts and let him spoon feed me how to use them because I just tried to do a little invite for a party using Pages. And all I wanted to do was drop a photo in and maybe put it on a little background square that had a different color and move them around and wrap some text around it. And I couldn't do it. It was horrible. It was a nightmare. Like I resized one of the boxes that had a photo on it and it was perfect size. And when I went to resize the other, just a rectangle that was in color, I wanted to change its size, could not resize it. I sat there screaming and complaining at it. And I don't know, I guess I'd hope since it was from Apple, I wouldn't have to take a, read a manual for, of course I'm not going to do that, but, or watch, Don's screencast. I didn't think I should have to do that. It ought to be intuitive. It really wasn't to me. I need some help.
It's also the first thing I hope when I open something, when I open a program is, do I have to read the manual? And hopefully not. But, with iWorks, it helps to read the manual.
I'm afraid so.
It works very good. Also, what I like with numbers is to get a page on an get it right to print it in Excel. Sometimes you it's sometimes difficult to get it right and to move it and make the space smaller to get it all on one page to print it. And in numbers, it's with a little slider on the bottom, and you just slide until it falls within your sheet, and you're fine. So these are Apple kind of things that I really like.
Yeah, I shouldn't imply that Excel was intuitive. It's just I've been using it for, I don't know, however long it's been out, I've been using it. So it's intuitive to me.
Yeah. Numbers also uses colors to help you with the, if you make calculations. It gives every calculation a different color, so you see where you, what rows and lines you...
You're referencing, or
yeah,
oh,
and that's also very nice to work with.
I should probably give it some more try, where I just, you know, really sit down and try to learn it. I've tried to do something like I need to do this, and I know how to do it in Excel. I'm going to try to do it in numbers, and I try to make numbers act exactly like Excel, which is probably not the way to go at it.
It's maybe not.
Probably figure out what numbers can do, and then find some things that it can do for me.
Yeah, it's always difficult to leave a program that you use so long, and you have to force yourself to not open it.
Now, I have no trouble leaving PowerPoint. I've been using PowerPoint since it got started, too. But leave it.
I understand that. Yeah.
Two things I want to ask you again from the open source perspective or the freeware. Pushing your wife towards the iWork suite, what did you consider giving her OpenOffice, NeoOffice, that sort of thing?
They're not beautiful.
That is absolutely true.
And then
Now, then
I don't have the motivation to use it, although it probably works fine.
Yeah, I wonder. I actually like it pretty well, but you're right. It's that industrial kind of looking thing. But it would have allowed her to just open her Microsoft Office documents and just work in them and then give them back. And she wouldn't have gained anything, but she wouldn't have maybe lost anything.
Yeah.
You wanted her to gain. Okay. How about this on your vector designing software? I've played around a little bit with, a piece of software called Inkscape. And I had the opportunity to go to the, Donald Burr's going to get mad at me for forgetting the name of the conference, but it's a Linux conference that I went to in Los Angeles last year. And I couldn't go to the tracks I wanted to because I didn't want to go on that day. So I ended up in the education track, and I don't have anything to do with education in reality, but it turns out teachers have no money. So they've been incredibly creative with the open source tools. And so I learned about all these awesome tools that I didn't know about. One of them was Inkscape, and it's a vector drawing package, and I found it really intuitive. I played around with it, and so I did have a crude understanding of what you were explaining earlier. And I thought it was fairly pretty. I mean, it's not, you know, gorgeous or anything, but it wasn't, you know, creepy and ugly.
Yeah.
Might be something to take a look at. It's free.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I had a problem of just some graphic I needed. Oh, I know what it was. I was looking for some graphics to shove into a document. PowerPoint document, and every one I could find was this weird file extension, and I didn't know what it was, and I looked it up, and I forget what the file extension is, but it's what vector graphics files come in. And so I was, I said, well, dang it, now I got to find a tool to open it, and then I remembered this thing, and I ended up getting Inkscape, and it was fantastic. It really, really worked well for me.
Yeah.
So.
Also, one of those programs is FileMaker. I don't know if you used FileMaker.
No, I really haven't.
Yeah. It's a database that we use at work many years. But also it's one of those old programs. Once it was from Apple, and now it's a sister company or something. And, well, it works as a database, but as a designing tool and a database has two sides. It's technical. It has to provide your right data, but also it has to look fine and print fine, and it has to be fun to work with. And, well, FileMaker has old tools to make, like, buttons, and it's not like Apple makes it today, and it's a pity.
Didn't they replace that with Bento?
No, they didn't replace that. Bento is kind of the little brother. I'm looking into that also, but I don't think you can do everything you want that you could do with FileMaker with Bento. But also, they know how it has to be, because they have Bento now. So I hope maybe in the future they change FileMaker the same way that Bento is created. So a more nicer interface and more easier to make icons, because in FileMaker you make databases and it's kind of like a website that it has to look with all buttons you click on, and it's the same, but it's so ugly now.
So you're still waiting for that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? We've been going on a long time here. It's funny. I was torturing Peter yesterday that I was scared we'd have nothing to talk about because we didn't have a plan. But I had a feeling it would all work out and we'd find more than enough. We had about 28 more ideas here of things to talk about, but we've run out of time, I'm afraid. So I really want to thank you for coming on the show. And how can people find you? You got a Twitter name or your website? What do you got?
I have a Twitter name, although I'm not a very good Twitter. That's also a Don McAllister podcast that I have to look into. But I have a Twitter name that's Peter Boats, in one without spaces, Peter Boats, and Boats is with B-O-O-D-T-S.
Great. And your website?
I'm still working on my own website, but I keep changing things, so it's not finished yet. But the one where I put my 3D presentations in, that is, my firm is called Lemon, so it's Lemon and then a minus sign, and then 3D.be.
Great. Well, it'll be fun to watch it. You know, you designer people, you're just always messing with your websites. That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
I've talked about that before. All right, Peter, well, I really thank you for coming on and being our spare Belgian for the day. Why do I have so many Belgian friends? How did that happen? I mean, your country's so small. How come so many of you know who I am and want to help?
We're interested, maybe.
Or interesting, I would even suggest.
Yeah, probably.
All right.
Yeah, well, thank you, Allison.
All right, Peter, we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Bye, Allison.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to Peter. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We've been corresponding for so long, it was fun to finally get to talk to him in real life. But I'm afraid that's going to wind things up for this week. Remember, you got this week's show a day early, so next week it's going to be a day late, so we keep the cosmos in balance. Don't be writing me in a panic to see if I fell off the earth when you don't get a NoSilicast in your feed on Monday morning. Also, keep track of my tweets to see if I'm going to do the show live on Monday night. My suspicion is not, because I'm going to be getting everything ready to go back to work. And, you know, there's all the chores and everything you got to do when you get back. So I may let the pressure off myself one more time and just finish up the show by myself. But I do got to tell you, it's pretty lonely in here doing the show without the chat room. It's also a lot faster and a lot less complicated to not do a live show, let me tell you. I get a lot done when I'm not just goofing around reading the chat room and having a ball with everybody. It is lonely, though. If you have any audio reviews you've been meaning to record and send in, this would be the perfect week to do it. You see, for every 10 minutes of audio you guys collectively send in, that's another Mai Tai I could have been sipping on in relaxation on vacation instead of working on the show. Get cracking. Get on a stick. Send in your comments and suggestions to Allison@podfeet.com. And don't forget the dumb questions. You know how I love those, but hey, make them really easy ones this week, okay? That would be swell. None of the hard ones. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And head on over to the NoSillaCast store to get some lovely logo items, like a doggy dish with the NoSillaCast logo on it, at cafepress.com/NoSillaCast. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.